Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I think I want to start with a basic point here, which is sometimes, and I think you're going to hear a lot in this case about abuse of discretion and inherent authority. And I think one thing to be clear is that sometimes those are buzzwords that get used sloppily by attorneys and litigants. We don't disagree that there are, as this Court has previously held, and I think Foote case is the primary example, that the authority of a court to disqualify attorneys goes beyond the thing stated in the statute. That's part of the common law authority. But the inherent authority isn't, and the discretion are not unlimited authority and not unlimited discretion. That there needs to be some facts alleged that trigger that authority. I think this, and in some of the cases cited in the brief, the Bennett case, the Eklimov case, or I'm probably mispronouncing that one. And I know this Court a couple years back had a habeas writ case that had started with the judge and the prosecutor bumping heads. There are times that judges disqualify prosecutors just because they're bumping heads and the judge does not like what the way the prosecutor is handling cases. And that's not something that triggers the inherent authority of the court to get rid of the prosecutor. The people of Missouri and the state of Missouri, while it's not exactly the same right, have a similar right to civil litigants and defendants to choose the attorneys that they wish to represent them. And in Missouri, the way we've set up, the voters, through their elected officials, have decided to set it up, is that we locally elect a prosecutor to handle the cases that arise in that county. And that local prosecutor should not be dislodged from a case without something that qualifies as good cause. And we don't think in this case that the underlying movement has demonstrated the good cause.
Well, we don't. Good cause isn't the test in LeMasters, is it? It's whether there's an appearance of impropriety or potential serious potential conflict, right?
Yeah. That would be the good cause. The appearance of impropriety is the good cause.
Let's talk about those tests. That's easier than the good cause, which can mean a lot of different things.
Yes.
In this context, that's what
in
it
this
means.
Context, the cause is the appearance of impropriety.
So
in
why
different case, there may be a different cause, but that's the overall thing. There needs to be something that qualifies as cause. Here, ultimately, eventually, they get to the cause as being the appearance of impropriety. And we think this court addressed this issue in LeMasters. And we think LeMasters set forth what should be the usual rule in the normal case. That in a case like this, where a former attorney for the party, in this case the move in a post-conviction case, the former attorney for a party leaves the defense side of the bar and joins the prosecutor's office, that attorney is personally disqualified, but that disqualification is not imputed to the prosecutor's office. Instead, you look at the facts of the case, and the key fact you look at is whether or not there is an adequate screening mechanism imposed, that in the usual case, that the creation of a screening mechanism will cure that appearance of impropriety. And that's the disagreement we have with respondent in this case.
Is there any evidence here that there was the person who was screened off had any involvement in the case?
The sole evidence and the undisputed evidence was she had no involvement in the case after joining our office.
And is the person who's trying the case, are they her supervisor or someone who might have information or authority over her?
No. The attorney in question, who was the defense attorney on the direct appeal, is currently, at the time this thing was filed, she was in the independence office case in Jackson County. She's now in the violent crimes unit. In Jackson County, we assign attorneys to handle PCRs based on the division, and the attorney who would have been the attorney of record, the one who testified, Mr. Saul, is assigned to our general crimes unit. Ms. Wolpink is assigned to our violent crimes unit. They're on different floors. There's no regular contact, and everyone's on notice that if they have a case that Ms. Wolpink was involved in as the public defender, either as the direct appeal counsel, we have about half and half that we have with Ms. Wolpink. About half she was the direct appeal counsel, half she filed the actual PCR motion before joining our office. So we've got both sets of cases, and our attorneys have been told, if you're in one of those cases, you're to have no contact with Ms. Wolpink.
Is Ms. Wolpink a potential witness?
In this case, there is suggestion that she may be called as a potential witness. There is not a claim against Ms. Wolpink in the amended, in the current amended motion. There's some question I think we note in the pleading about whether or not there may be some more issues about the amended motion.
Would that affect the result if she were a potential witness?
We don't think so, because I think that in anything that would make it less of a conflict because, or less of an appearance of impropriety, because if there were claims against her, then that would waive the confidentiality to the claim against her. My understanding is that the extent that she's a potential witness, and obviously I think in the transcript we talked about the fact this could change depending upon how trial counsel testifies and how things come up in the hearing, that the main thing she's currently being endorsed as a witness on is the issue of how you get a transcript of the preliminary hearing. And I think there are other witnesses who could testify to the same thing, and that I think should be common knowledge across the state of Missouri that on those audio recording things, you'd simply file a request with the clerk to have them send it to OSCA to get it transcribed. So I don't think that she's really being asked to testify about personal knowledge about this case in her proposed testimony. She's being asked to testify about knowledge about how the transcription system works in Jackson County, which any attorney can testify.
I'm kind of asking your position. If there's a screen in place, does it matter if she's going to be a witness? Maybe it does. Do our cases address that?
I don't think the cases that we've had previously address it. I think the screening mechanism, the reason that this court has encouraged a screening mechanism, both going back 25 years ago in Ross and has reemphasized in LeMasters, is the goal is to keep the confidential information confidential. Whatever's supposed to be confidential, we can't talk to her about that confidential
information. Isn't the genesis of that concept based in the rules of professional responsibility?
I think the rules encourage it. This court, I think, both in Ross in the concurrent representation and in LeMaster's excessive representation, have made that encouragement into not a complete absolute mandate, but certainly y'all have told us this is the way that we get around being conflicted out of cases when we hire someone, whether or not it's a defense attorney, someone who, a law student who during their law school interned with a defense attorney, a clerk who interned for one of the judges on our bench. All those people come to our office with potential conflicts. And what we, and I think what every prosecutor around the state of Missouri wants from this court, and we thought we got in the LeMasters, but the judge in this case disagreed with our interpretation of LeMasters, was that absolute guidance on what we need to do when we hire new attorneys so that we're not being conflicted out of a significant number of cases. Because I think,
and would you, you've talked about the standards the court should apply, and one of them is the appearance of impropriety. And I would assume the defendant being represented would believe there was an appearance of impropriety. But what's the test? The public in general, who is considering the appearance of impropriety that should guide us?
I think this court was clear when it said what a reasonable person would view. And reasonable person is generally
Didn't it suggest a reasonable person who knows the facts?
Correct. The reasonable person with knowledge of the facts. Obviously, someone doesn't know anything about the case, would say, may see something weird going on in a case because they do not understand the facts of the case. So it's a reasonable person. I think reasonable person generally in the law is viewed as an objective standard. It's not what I personally think is improper. It's not what, with all due respect, Judge Rounds thinks is improper. It's what an objective person would think is improper. And what this court said in LeMasters, I think our big disagreement with Judge Rounds in this case, is one, it said in the usual case, screening is adequate. Judge Rounds was quite clear on the record that he does not think it is possible to ever have adequate screening. That there's always a chance there could be a flaw in the screening, that something could slip through the cracks, and therefore screening is not going to be enough for him. We think that's directly contrary to what this court said in LeMaster.
Was there something in particular in these facts that caused them to doubt the screen, or it's just in general he doesn't think screens are adequate, according to the record?
He was general in his discussion that he thought that, what he said, that he thought there's, you've got an attorney, who has a conflict, who potentially has confidential information, or allegedly has confidential information, and just somehow, somewhere, it could slip through, she could accidentally disclose it. And I think that would apply to every case in which an attorney had, it could have applied to the case in LeMasters, that that attorney had talked to the client, she'd had her investigator talk to the client and presumably give a report back to her. She'd done a memo summarizing potential defenses. So she had some information, and theoretically, it could have accidentally come out. And this court said that in the absence of any information showing the screening wasn't working or didn't work, that the screening mechanism was enough to dispel the appearance of impropriety.
But the respondent's viewpoint is that no screen is good enough, and that there's no way that any former public defender could ever work in the prosecutor's office.
Essentially, that's what it sounded like to me during the argument. That's what I think the way at least he conveyed in the transcript. And that's the main reason why we're here. We think this court gave us guidance on what we need to do when we're hiring someone like Ms. Wolpink. And as Ms. Wolpink's not unique in our office in having conflicts, her conflicts are different than others. But you hire 70 attorneys in an office with regular turnover, you're going to have people who come in with certain cases they can't be on. And there's something that would have been discussed when Ms. Wolpink was being hired. What do we need to do in these cases? But if we're doing it wrong, tell us.
Well, and that's, I guess, it's impossible to draw a straight line on this. I mean, if this attorney had become the elected prosecutor, whose name would be on all the pleadings, regardless of what specific lawyer handled the case, would that, at that point in time, come to the point where screening could not be sufficient?
At least this court and this prior president said someone in that type of position does have a more serious appearance of impropriety that I don't know if it could never be properly screened up, but at least this court in Burns and this language in LeMasters suggested that would be something different. But this is an ordinary line attorney in the office.
Counsel,
just where she comes from previously.
Screening is an issue of confidentiality.
Yes.
I read Judge Round's order to be concerned not with confidentiality, but loyalty.
Yes.
And if I thought that was a reasonable view of the law, I could understand why no screen can protect you from the split loyalty that Judge Round perceives Ms. Wolpink to have now, a loyalty to her former client and a loyalty to her current client. Am I reading the order correctly?
I think that I'm not sure if that's what's driving. I know that's one of the things. I think that's the original order. That's the original order that Judge Rounds had. And I think, as I said, we don't disagree. That's why Ms. Wolpink personally is disqualified. And there's no dispute that Ms. Wolpink can't be involved in this case except for as a witness, and we're not allowing her to have any role in the case other than as a witness. But what this court said in LeMasters is that personal disqualification because of her personal conflict, the rule's clear that that's not imputed to the entire office. And that's what Judge Rounds did in the initial order. He just imputed it to the entire office. And then his discussion during the hearing on the motion to set aside shows that he has this concept that you can't do, that screening is not enough. And I think this court said in LeMasters that screening is enough. And obviously, if that's wrong, tell us what we need to do in these cases. Because we're trying to do what we're supposed to be doing, and if we can't hire these people, then we'll have to act on that. We think we should be able to hire these people, but if we can't, let us know and we can make our hiring decisions appropriately. Thank you.
May it please the court. It's a great honor to be here in front of the court this morning. Let me say it's a nice honor and good to see Judge Powell again. You all are very lucky to have him. We miss him a great deal in Jackson County.
I'll pay you later.
What?
I'll pay you later.
It's odd being the respondent and getting up second. I had my argument all written out, but I think I'm just going to answer the questions and things that came up on this case. When Judge Wilson talked about the split loyalty, you have to understand the procedure in this was, unlike the last case, I injected the issue. I represented Mr. Skinner. I filed the motion. We had a hearing that was not on the record. The judge wrote the order. Then the state filed a motion to reconsider, at which there was a hearing, and Mr. Sauls testified about the screening process, and a further record was made. So when there's a little, I want you to be clear on the first order, and that is all included in Mr. Messonnier's appendix. I think Lemasters is, I'm not disagreeing with Lemasters entirely. I'm not disagreeing with the screening process. I'm not disagreeing with the reasonable person standard, but I think there's more to Lemasters to discuss here. Lemasters is factually distinguishable. The young woman in Lemasters in Newton County at the public defender's office that time did not have a the in-depth attorney-client relationship as it is portrayed, because this court, when it recites the facts in Lemasters, recites that it was quite a contentious relationship. She kept telling her staff to deal with him, so on and so forth. And she was a trial attorney, and there is trial strategy. But this brings up the distinguishable part of my case. This is different, and we look for direction also. I agree with Mr. Messonnier that my side looks for direction because this is a factually distinguishable circumstance. Ms. Wolpink was the direct appeal attorney, and to characterize the direct appeal attorney's communication about what went on at the trial and ineffective assistance of counsel and issues of trial strategy as cursory is misguided and somewhat academic, because in the real world, we have clients that don't know, and we have to inform them, you know, I can't raise this issue. And even though we tell them that, they still want to discuss it.
But isn't the bottom line, though, I mean, everybody realizes she has a conflict, so that's not really the question, whether she's invested or she's loyal. Everybody is presuming that. The question is whether or not the process that keeps her out of her new employment has any effect on him. And if the only evidence is that it doesn't, then how would a person with reasonable knowledge of the facts think there's an appearance of impropriety?
Well, now here, I was just going to get to that. You're a mind reader. The other issue is, I said to Judge Round, here is what I can tell you under my attorney-client privilege in the case, my duty by the rules to Mr. Skinner. I can tell you that there were conversations about the issues in this case. And Mr. Messonnier correctly cited that Ms. Wolpink, in the amended motion, may be called as a witness about this transcript issue, how to get it from a local court reporter, not Oscar, who sat there and recorded the preliminary hearing, but also about other issues in this case.
Again, why does any of that matter if there's a screen?
Well, it matters because then the prosecutor says there's no finding. This is what I seek advice on for us. It matters because then the prosecutor can come back and say there's nothing on the record. I am telling Judge Round.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, okay. Everybody is presuming that there's a conflict with this person. If you wanted something on, if there is something on the record that there was, that the screen wasn't appropriate, that's one thing.
Well,
but if it just relates to situations with her client, that's the disconnect.
Well, it also relates to situations with the same man who is my client, and what I can tell, my hands being tied, and what I can tell if the court in this situation, you know, wants an in-camera review, if they want me to say...
Of what?
Of what I know that Ms. Wolpink knows.
What does it matter? You're not getting to the question we're asking, which is, if she's screened off, we assume she has knowledge that would make it totally inappropriate for her to share, there's a screen. You're not saying there's evidence here in this case that the screen is ineffective, which...
No, no, I'm not.
So if we were to adopt your rule, hold on, counsel, if we were to adopt your rule that in every case in which someone represented someone at trial or on direct appeal, that we would have to say that prosecutor's office can't handle it.
Well, I think I have to...
Tell me why that's not what you're arguing.
I'm not arguing that, because I'm arguing in this specific one case,
but
what I know...
Tell me what's different
about this specific one case, that yes, they did talk, because that's what some of the other cases say. Well, they didn't talk about strategy. They didn't share anything.
Didn't who? It doesn't. Again, are you saying there was discussion with the prosecuting attorney's office about strategy?
No.
Then why does it matter?
Okay. It matters because we are arguing. I think the thing that I want to get to is why this matters is because we are arguing, and you're right. Terrence said, no doubt that Ms. Wolpink has a conflict. We're trying to get to whether under LeMasters you can disqualify the entire office. Now, under that factual scenario, this court said they cannot. I feel this factual scenario is different.
But we're not understanding why it's different.
Well, it is different because I think the record in LeMasters showed...
You think that was cursory knowledge? This is a lot more knowledge. Why does that matter? I'm not clear from your argument why that matters.
Well, I think it matters, and it goes to what a reasonable person would think is how deeply the involvement is the attorney with the client.
Let me redirect again. If nobody is suggesting, right, that she's violating her rules of professional responsibility, and nobody is suggesting that the prosecuting attorney is trying to discover information that they shouldn't, then that's the facts that a reasonable person would have in making the decision about whether or not there's an appearance of impropriety.
Well, that is some of the facts. I agree with you. But I think what the prosecutor is arguing, or what Mr. Messonnier is arguing, is that seals the deal, that stops it, and that does not prevent or does not allow for disqualification of the entire office.
Are you trying to say that because of the relationship that you understand that the former public defender had with your now client, that a reasonable person in your client's position would feel that the entire prosecutor's office could not be unbiased, or there's some impropriety there?
My client and a reasonable person. Not a reasonable person in my client's situation, but a reasonable person looking at the situation.
You're saying you wouldn't trust the screen if they knew too much. I mean, that I don't understand what else.
Well,
but
I think LeMasters, what I'm saying is LeMasters doesn't say it's screening, we're done.
No, of course, because you could have evidence the screen was ineffective, or some information had been discussed prior to the screen, or something else, but I'm not...
Or it has to do with more than just the screening. I read in LeMasters that said an appearance of impropriety judged only from the defendant's perspective cannot be sufficient for relief. It goes on to talk about a reasonable person, and it goes on to talk about society's view of whether looking at this, a reasonable person from society's standpoint can stand there and look at this and say there is not an actual appearance of impropriety. And Judge Round was quite clear that it was actual and not even a close call in his mind.
Because there could be leaks in the screen, is what he said.
He did say that no screening. He did discuss that he didn't believe any screening process could be perfect in this situation, and I may not be...
And certainly screening processes may not be in individual cases, but that would overrule LeMasters if we said screens inherently are ineffective.
That would impact LeMasters, and that's not what we're asking. I think in LeMasters, they took into consideration the screening and what knowledge this person had to screen them off.
If I'm understanding correctly, I just want to make sure I do. You're saying to a reasonable person, if you had a lot of information about the case, just no one's going to believe it. Not that you're violating the screen, or we should assume that, but that people are just going to think you just got too much information, you can't keep quiet, they're not going to trust it. Whereas if you were peripherally involved, they're going to go, oh, yeah, yeah, I understand, that was just technical.
That is exactly what I'm saying, and maybe I should have led off with that rather than going into the facts and circumstances. And if, you know, I'm as open to reprimand as the next lawyer, if this was not proved properly, if the fault lies on me in not presenting enough evidence or asking for an in-camera review of what knowledge I possessed that Ms. Wolpink possessed that would lead to that exact scenario.
No, it won't lead to that. How can it do that?
Because everybody is assuming that she has a wonderful, loyal relationship with her client, and that she's following the rules that she's governed by, and that the prosecuting attorney's office is governing the rules that they're governed by, and the rules are rules that this court has implemented to protect not only the public and your client, but the integrity of the system.
Correct.
And so it seems like to me you're suggesting instead of imputing good motive and good actions, we should impute poor motive and poor actions on behalf of every side.
If I am, I don't mean to do that. Okay? I didn't stand up and say in front of Judge Round that the prosecutors have bad motive in this. You know, they are trying to do their job. I brought this in front of Judge Round. Judge Round looked at it, used the Miller-Masters standard, exercised his discretion, and said it's not even a close call.
But that's not the case, because there's no particular facts here except the fact that you're saying if you were the public defender with lots of detailed information, which you may have discussed with others in the public defender's office about a case, a screen is inherently inadequate. And so that's a decision for this court as a matter of law. It's not a factual decision that there's something in these facts that shows the screen is invalid. We would have to say, he interpreted, I'm sure, LeMaster's not to apply in that situation. You're saying he thought it just applied where you technically had some knowledge but no real detailed knowledge. And so the question for us is the legal one, is his understanding of the limitations of LeMaster's correct? Because there's not like some facts here that show there was some breach in the screen. There's no factual.
No, there are no facts that show there was a breach in the screen.
Could I raise an issue? The conflict that you believe arises, is that a similar conflict that arises between trial counsel and post-conviction counsel within the public defender's office?
Well, I think that's why this court had the State X. Earl Boniker case and we divided our schematics up into two. I thought of that as I was driving down the interstate yesterday. I mean, it is somewhat similar, and that is why we are separate divisions and separate.
But it's still all within the public defender's office.
It is still all within the public defender's office.
One office is screened from the other.
That is correct.
And you're saying that's much more of a screen than having an individual prosecutor screened from the rest of the office.
It is factually different and much more intense. I don't want to say hardcore, but it is factually different.
I tell you how the two situations are different. At least could be perceived to be different, and this is what I'm concerned Judge Round was thinking. That the issue isn't confidentiality and screens. The issue is loyalty and who do you want to win. And when you're talking about moving from trial counsel to PCR counsel, you could think that they still are on the defendant's side. But when you move from the prosecutor, from the defendant's office, the PD's office to the prosecutor's office, you no longer, in Judge Round, I'm worried that Judge Round thinks you no longer want the defendant to win, you want the state to win, and that might color her testimony or other participation in the case. Now,
Am I misreading the ground?
You know, having been there, I did not. I know there is mentioned words in the first order, but when we went on the record, that did not come up. And the issue of loyalty or the issue of you are going to be of detrimental harm, in all honesty, you know, George Washington and I cannot tell a lie, it did not come up with Tyrone Skinner in that hearing that, you know, well, Jeanette Wolpang can't ever be served two masters and it's going to hurt
so
Tyrone Skinner.
In the hearing, after the order,
yes,
the discussion was about confidence and the effectiveness of a wall to protect confidences.
For the main part, that is what it was.
That's helpful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I think one of the concerns that we have with the implicit standard being proposed by a respondent in this case is that's not a workable standard. If the issue is how much confidential information the former attorney has had, there's never going to be a way to make a good record of how much information she's had or he had, depending on who the attorney was. It's going to be basically letting the defense attorneys decide who the prosecutor is in the case. And because if they don't like the prosecutor in the case, they're going to say, well, this former defense attorney who handled the case before they went to the prosecutor's office, they just have too much information, and they can't ever be trusted to keep that confidential. And that's just not a workable standard because there's no way to test that, the accuracy of that statement, other than the honor and integrity of the attorneys making the motion. And a standard that works that way can't be the standard. There has to be something factual, objective, that can be measured in court. Here we present in court the attorney handling the case to testify about the screening mechanism in place. He was available for cross-examination. Ms. Martin opted not to cross-examine him and to accept his testimony as accurate, that was the screening mechanism. There has neither from Judge Rounds or from Ms. Martin, there's never been an argument in this case about how or why, what we haven't done that we should be doing to effectively screen. It is just Judge Rounds' position that you can't effectively screen, period.
And the concern would be that I think has been expressed by Judge Round and whether it's the public or whether it is Mr. Skinner, it would be almost impossible for a defendant to prove a breach of confidentiality by counsel who goes to work for the prosecutor's office.
Other than, obviously, we're attorneys and we're officers of the court subject to discipline. If we perjure ourselves on the stand, you had the witness here, an officer of the court testifying under oath, that there has been no such conversations. If there was a basis for believing there had been conversations, they could put on the record their basis for believing and impeach, hasn't she told you X?
Most defendants are not going to, unless there's some error by counsel to reveal that, by the prosecutors to reveal that, most defendants would never have access to knowing whether confidentiality had been breached or not.
And obviously that's going to be part of the facts that the court is considering. The facts, the evidence and the facts are ultimately the evidence and the facts, and it's always possible to speculate there's something else out there that might, if it was true in a case, create a different result. But if that's what we have to worry about, which is what I think ultimately Judge Rounds got to, the sheer potential that it could happen in some case, if that's the standard, then Judge Rounds' correct screening is always ineffective, and that's contrary to what this court said in LeMasters. Basically, the position relator is this court in LeMasters showed how to apply its test, and Judge Rounds didn't apply the test the way this court told him to apply the test, and in fact opine things that are directly contrary to what this court said. Therefore, we think it's erroneous as a matter of law, which makes it an abuse of discretion. Thank you.